All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy-to-understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on, you know, how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic morning, noon, or night. Wherever you are in the world, you are certainly in the right place because you are here joining just me today on the Crypto 101 podcast. My notorious co-host, Mr. Pizza Mind, was having some serious technical difficulties. It sounded like he was speaking through a robot machine that was looping back and forth. And we had our guest on here a few minutes just waiting and trying to get this stuff figured out. So Pizza Mind, you're going to miss a good one because we're joined today by Kasala Hemachandra, the founder and CEO of My Ether Wallet, aka Mew. So Kasala, welcome to the show and thanks for bearing with us here on a little bit of a late start.
Of course. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
It's funny, like we had more technical difficulties going into just recording this podcast than the entire Ethereum merge had on the night of the merge, which just happened very successfully. Tell us a little bit about what was going on with the Ethereum merge and how did it go so smoothly?
Yeah, I think it's mainly, for the past, I'd say, okay, so we have to go all the way back, right? Like when Ethereum first came out in 2015, August, POS or the merge was on the roadmap. They were planning to finish it in like a year.
Yeah.
That didn't.
7 years later.
Yeah. And then the next year, and then the next year, a few years went by. And then for the past 2 years or so, a lot of people are super skeptical about it too. It's like, why is it taking so long? Why are there so many delays? Why, like, this is not going to happen? And I even heard miners just like betting against POS not going through. They are like, oh, definitely, we'll still keep mining. That's not going to be a problem. This is how it's going to be. But the good news is those delays actually meant something. Those delays meant that this POS, the merge, will go smoothly as it went. And we all saw it, and which is amazing to see. I know, like, we were all expecting. And I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I was super nervous. And I was like, I was 99% sure that it's going to go smoothly. But still that 1% of nervousness is like, oh my gosh, something's going to go wrong. Yeah. Something's going to happen. But at the end of the day, we all know, like, best minds or the smartest minds in this world were working on this. And then if they did the best and they made sure everything went smoothly.
Yeah. It was one of those things where they had planned for, you know, like you said, 7 years for this day and kept pushing it back because they had done so many tests. And one of the interesting things I thought that one of the analogies somebody on the podcast had mentioned was like, you know, they said, Bryce, this is like the same level of detail
that, you know, Elon Musk will put into a rocket ship launch. He goes, there's $250 billion of value secured on this Ethereum network. And that's just the Ethereum token alone, not to mention, let's round up to $100 billion of value across DeFi and, you know, different applications built on top of Ethereum. So we're talking almost a half a trillion dollar launch.
Easily.
And this is, you know, aerospace level engineering. And even as a, you know, you've run my Ether wallet, which is one of the earliest, you know, crypto wallets for Ethereum. You've been with Ethereum probably since it was before even $1 billion market cap. What was it surreal to watch this rocket ship launch kind of take off, and you having just played such a big part in the ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It was just this mind-blowing moment, because like we were all expecting this to happen for the past 7 years, and then finally it happened. And it's just like just being there, just looking at it. I mean, I had two computers up and running, just like watching the live stream from Ethereum Foundation. And then one of my computers actually merged to POS. And then I saw the panda icon and image and everything.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at the live stream and then nothing happened. They were still waiting. I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like for a quick 5 seconds, I was just concerned. But like, it was just mind blowing. It's amazing to see and amazing to be in the space and then see all this development. And yes, you are 100% correct. It wasn't even $1 billion when we, or when I at least entered to the market, and then my Ether wallet came 2 weeks after. So like we've been part of the Ethereum ecosystem since the beginning of Ethereum mainnet launch. And it's amazing to see all like every single step of the development process and every single step led to the merge as of now.
Yeah, right.
And I also want to make sure everyone is aware that this is not the end. This is the first step towards a whole nother level or whole nother version of Ethereum that's going to upgrade eventually, like within the next 6 months, 12 months. Like they have, like, think a 5-year plan for new upgrades and updates to make it more scalable, add more functionality, things like that. So this is the start of a whole nother era.
I love it. Yeah, no, I think that's great. You know, somebody was telling me the other day, they're like, all right, well, the merge happened. Like, that's it. Like, okay, what's next? And I'm like, no, the merge is the beginning of something brand new. It's it's the Ethereum 2.0 view of, you know, having, you know, sharding and all this, you know, very sharp, quick data availability of, so that, you know, applications can now, you know, span, you know, millions of users simultaneously. And what I think that, you know, this whole, you know, the whole promised land of the Ethereum 2.0 ecosystem is like, we're going to be able to now finally move from the world of experimentation and small localized little crypto communities that are, you know, firing off on one another in Twitter, and like, will now be you know, a platform that can house truly the financial applications of the future, because the bandwidth will be there, right? And yeah. I view a lot of this as being so similar to the early days of the internet, where it's like, you know, all the guys like us who are the nerds who are thinking about this stuff way before anybody uses it. They're like, well, why are you guys interested in this? All you could do is send a text message to like four other, you know, intranets. Like, that's not that cool. But we're like, if you kind of play it out into the future, one day you'll be able to have videos. And people are like laughing. They're just like, oh, you could have, you know, it'll take you 10 minutes to download a kilobyte, you know, package, and it looks like it was shot on a potato. Like, but then, but we said, oh, well, one day you'll be able to have, you know, 4K streaming to every device in America. Just wait, you'll see. Yeah. And then sure enough, 20, 30 years later, now we're here and we can do that. And so this to me is like, you know, people laugh at crypto because like you could only have these little borrow and lend facilities that could house, you know, $100 million and stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's not big, but hey, it's a proof of concept. And Ethereum 2.0 is going to take us from proof of concept to now the doors are open, business is open, kind of come build here. And I think that that is going to have a lot of, you know, enterprise value. You know, companies can kind of attach themselves to this Ethereum open network. That'll help their enterprise value boost up. And there's going to be a whole lot that people can do with this. And I guess my, you know, my long-winded preamble is all kind of, you know, resolving to a question of like, what do you think are going to be the most valuable things to happen on this new Ethereum platform that maybe weren't even possible before the merge and like, well, the finalized version of ETH 2.0.
Yeah. So yeah, going off with your example, like remember back in the day when we had like Nokia phones and then like yes. little images will load black and white pixels yep. one by one, and then you'll see a little emoji.
Yep.
And then look, now we have phones that can play like 4K videos, right? And then yeah. you don't, it's completely wireless, and the 5G networks, and then people are working on like multi, like in the next generation of the network itself, which can handle magnitudes of the bandwidth that it can handle with 5G. So things like that. So when Ethereum first came out, it's like you send one single transaction. Like tokens didn't even exist. It was just like you right. said back and forth, right? It was more like Bitcoin back then. And so smart contracts wasn't even like, it was there. They had the capability, but nobody really used it. Nobody really knew how to use it even. So, and look at us now, right? We already have lending, borrowing platforms, DeFi, completely decentralized exchanges running on Ethereum. And like NFTs were a big thing in the past, and which was never a possibility with a centralized version, right? It's not possible to have NFTs hosted or like NFT type of thing on a centralized environment. So now we have all this already. And then that's a huge improvement. That's like from, if you look at 7 years ago, Ethereum to now, it's already amazing and by itself. But like the main problems that we are having, or like main problems that a lot of people or like a lot of devs are having, okay, we have a user base, but all the users can't interact because like, for example, this is like the major, most biggest issue, right? The gas price. And like you had to spend a lot of money in gas price if like someone wants to mint an NFT or like even do an exchange. So I think like last time I checked, like a couple of hours ago, it was around $43 to do a swap from one token to another, which is, you know, which is high. Like it's not possible. If you're swapping $100,000 or so, then like maybe $43 is negligible. But at the same time, if you're doing like a $50 swap, then obviously $43 is a lot. So, and the good news is we are all aware of these issues. And then the merge is getting one step closer to solving that. The merge, the POS merge did not solve it. Period. So, but like, it's the first step towards solving the scalability issue. And I think like the final goal is to support somewhere around like 100,000 transactions per second. And the moment we hit that, it's just for the people who are not aware of like how crypto is functioning or how centralized services are functioning. Basically, Visa cards can only handle 20,000 transactions per second. The last time I checked. But like, 100,000 transactions per second is already 5x. So that means that we are already going to beat like all the centralized servers.
Hell yeah.
And it's amazing. And doing it in a decentralized manner, like it's again, mind-blowing. And I feel like that's like my next biggest thing that I'm going to wait for. And then if I have to stay up and until like 2 a.m. in the morning to watch that's happening, then yeah, that's the case. I mean, for the POS, I was up at midnight. I think it happened around midnight.
Was your whole team like online? You're kind of like ready to go just in case kind of, you know, crap hit the fan. Everybody was kind
of
on call.
Most of them, which is funny because like we didn't make it mandatory or anything. We made sure everyone's aware of like this is happening. And then a few developers were online just in case if something goes wrong. But later on, we all found out that everyone was online looking at a stream, and it was not like it was not mandatory, but everyone was just excited similarly as like myself. So, which is, you know, amazing. And then we are also like, as we grow, we are also building a community who believe in this whole ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything wrong about Bitcoin, but like I totally believe in Bitcoin. It's going to be the value token. And it's going to be like my way of expressing Bitcoin is like gold in real life. Gold is not going to go away. Gold will always be there, and it carries value, but versus ETH will be a utility token, right? Like it's like USD, Euro, you know, Japan yen, something like that, where you can actually carry it to a store and then buy something. It's not like you can carry like ounce of gold to buy a bag of chips, right? But like, if you look at all the other ecosystem, all the other like blockchains out there, I feel like Ethereum is the most developing, or like you see something happening in Ethereum all the time, which means that it's moving forward. It's not stagnant. Versus, I mean, it's not necessary for some of the other blockchains to keep moving forward because they're happy where they are. But at the same time, if you look at any software, right, if you like be stale, if you don't make any updates to your software, then it's possible that you might lose your usership because they might move on to another blockchain that can accomplish what they want to accomplish. So, and this is also another reason why Ethereum is so super interesting to me, because all these developments happening, all these like really bright, smart minds behind it, and then making changes or like adding new features on basically like every day. Yeah. So, which is extremely exciting.
And it seems like there's just so many new applications that get formed on Ethereum every day. And, you know, something you said that was kind of interesting was, you know, Ethereum is this, you know, more utility token on top of this network, whereas Bitcoin is more like the digital gold. And I kind of think like Ethereum is more like this digital oil. And I know a lot of people have made that sort of analogy, but I'll take it a step further. And I would say that probably in 5 or 10 years, like there will be more machines and more software programs that are transacting Ethereum on a daily basis than humans. And I think that that's probably going to be specific to Ethereum, because in order for these smart contracts to run and operate, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, but like they need to have Ethereum in their smart, their automatic little smart contract wallet in order to facilitate transactions. And so I think that, you know, people are probably going to be spending stable coins or tokens like, you know, on the Ethereum network, but most of the actual ETH will probably be used by these machines. You know, do you think that that would be something way off base or kind of on track?
No, I don't. Yeah, I think it'll definitely be. I mean, that's why like Ethereum is also the gas, right? Because that's what fuels the whole ecosystem. That's definitely a possibility. Like in the future, 5-8 years from now, like all these IoTs, right? Like the Internet of Things, like everything, like even your fridge can. I've seen like a fridge, which is, I think by Samsung or something, that can order groceries for you if you're like running low on that. Those things, I mean, obviously right now it's happening via a credit card or some kind of a centralized service, but those things easily could be on the blockchain. Like just to also imagine like your electricity meter, right? Like the meter. So it can maybe once per second or like once per hour, you can send a small message or transaction saying, okay, this is the level or this is the value right as of right now. This is the value as of right now, which
could, it could talk directly to the car.
It could talk directly to the car as well. So, and this, all of this can happen without basically any servers. And I in the future, it also could be right now, the user who's actually sending the transactions need to pay for gas, but like eventually there will be a feature which will enable some other wallet to pay for gas as well. So not everyone needs to have gas in there. Like for example, a dApp user, right? Like if let's say this is a purely an example, or like an NFT that you want to mint an NFT on this specific dApp, but the problem is you don't have ETH. So you can't mint, you cannot mint the NFT, but the dApp has, let's say, enough ETH to give away to all these users, so they can pay for the gas. So things like that could be definitely part of the future. And this is also why ETH is called gas, because it's technically what facilitates the Ethereum network, not even though we use it as a token as well to send value back and forth, but it's the main goal of ETH is to run the whole network. So that's what controls it. And all the other tokens built on, like wrapped ETH could be a token that you can, you know, think of it as a value. And this is what all, every single decentralized exchange use as of now, because they don't want to deal directly with ETH. But yeah, so yeah, I agree. Definitely like in the future, it could be IoTs or machines talking to each other and then using ETH as gas.
Future's going to be a wild place. And one of the things that, you know, in order to interact with crypto, you need a wallet, right? I mean, that's pretty base level. Just like if you want to interact with the web, you need a web browser. And I've always kind of thought as of crypto wallets similarly to web browsers, right? In the beginning, there was a bunch of different browsers, just like there's a bunch of different wallets. But eventually, you know, do you think that we're going to settle on one standard, or will it really be, you know, and is that even an accurate kind of analogy?
So the wallet standard is, as of right now, is like any, basically you can, don't do this, but you can write down like 64 characters, which are between zero and F, and that's the wallet address, right? That's a private key. But don't do that, because like humans are not capable of generating enough entropy. So if you do, if you write down that and then use it as a wallet, it's possible that some kind of a person will be able to figure that out and empty and your wallet.
Brute force the private key.
Yeah, brute force the private key. So that's basically a private key as of right now, right? So, but like there's also the quantum machines problem coming up pretty soon. I think like eventually quantum machines will be able to figure out private keys like exponentially faster than regular computers. So that's going to happen. So eventually like this, the current private key standard will change. So, but as of now, talking like as of right now, this is the private key. But the good news is users doesn't necessarily have to memorize this or remember this all the time. And it's, I would say it's next to impossible to remember 64 characters, right? Random characters. So, and then the wallets are like, for example, my Ether wallet is a wallet that lets you access your account via like hardware wallets. We are like browser extensions. We are, even if you have the raw private key, you can access it. And so that kind of standard is already laid out. So there will be multiple wallets, and which is a good thing in the ecosystem, which is decentralized, right? Because we all believe in decentralization, and different wallets will let you do different things. There are different use cases, and that's why there's this one standard that everyone is following, which makes it way easier for all the wallets to integrate different key files or different private keys. And so this is why I actually think the competition is really good, because now every single wallet is trying to, you know, figure out, well, okay, what's the next best feature that we can add to be on top of the other competitor, things like that. So which is like, we are in a constant cycle of improvement in order to compete with each other, which eventually makes the user have the best feature set for them to access the network. And this is also why, and then like it, while we were doing this, we are already in like a good place in Ethereum ecosystem. We also realized that the other net blockchains are not doing a pretty good job on like creating wallets, like wallets, wallet interfaces to make it more user-friendly. And then like those networks, they have millions of users as well, but they're in like this constant struggle of how to access their wallets, how to access or send funds. And this is basically, and it reminded me why I initially started my Ether wallet as well, because I saw on Reddit that so many people were having issues just simply unlocking their key store file or sending ETH from person point A to point B, or wallet A to wallet B. And I was like, okay, I can put together a simple interface. And then now 7 years in, I'm seeing that, unfortunately, I'm still seeing that for other blockchains. So that's why, I'm not sure whether you're familiar with Encrypt, which is our latest browser extension that we released a month ago. So will
Encrypt be able to, you know, function as a wallet on different networks as opposed to just Ethereum?
Yeah. So we are basically enabling, obviously all the Ethereum networks are supported, Ethereum based, like Polygon, Ethereum, Binance chain, all those chains are supported.
And all the EVMs.
EVM chains. And then we also added the whole Polkadot ecosystem. So nice. Polkadot, Kusama, we recently released Astar, Shiden, Akala, all those like Polkadot ecosystems are already included. And then Bitcoin is on the way as well.
So these days, it seems like every new potential hire can feel like this high stakes wager for your small business. I mean, you want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best, most qualified candidates available. And so that's exactly why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. Okay. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. In fact, our brand new super podcast producer, TiVo, the absolute man myth legend himself. He literally just started here at Crypto 101 this month to take us to the next level. And we found him through LinkedIn. He's one of many that we found thanks to LinkedIn this year alone, believe it or not. So guys, get this. It's so easy to create a job post on LinkedIn. Once you've done so, all you got to do is just add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. And you can start spreading the word that you are hiring. Simple tools like screening questions and stuff, it just makes it easy for you to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. And we're always, always, always looking to finish the year strong here at Crypto 101. And by using LinkedIn Jobs, we were able to bring on the right podcast producer candidate in TiVo. Okay, TiVo's the man, along with a bunch of other great new team members. So it's stories like our own that show us why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. So Crypto 101 listeners, you can go to LinkedIn Jobs to help you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to and do it a heck of a lot faster. So you can go, you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/crypto. Okay, that's linkedin.com/crypto, and you could post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
These different blockchains have different capabilities, right? And then they offer different things to the users. And then why do we have to create a future where people needs to use different wallets for different blockchains? Because the future that I'm looking at, users doesn't even need to know what blockchain they're interacting with. Like, for example, when you use Venmo, right? You don't know whether the Venmo service are hosted in AWS or Google or some other service.
Or whether that person has a Chase bank or a Bank of America bank.
Exactly.
It's kind of agnostic.
Yeah, like that's the future for blockchain that I'm looking at. Like, it's agnostic future.
There's a protocol called Axelar that's coming out that I heard about that's trying to do that same,
oh,
that
really?
Same concept. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely take
a look
at it.
Write it down. A-X-E-L-A-R. Axelar.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I would love to take a look at it and maybe like get in touch with them as well. It's like, if you make it like we all talk about mass adoption. We all want like everyone to use blockchain, but going back to your wallet standard, right?
Like, yeah, no one's is it gonna easy be, enough yet for
yeah,
everyone?
Like, no one's going to remember 64 characters. And like, if they have to create like 10 different wallets to interact with 10 different blockchains, like you're already losing 70 to 80% of your user base. So it's like, totally. It's not something that'll happen. So future is the mass adoption, but we have to take small steps today in order for that to happen in the future.
And so tell me a little bit more about the plans for My Ether Wallet. I think, you know, it's been on the you know, forefront of Ethereum for 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And they just had the merge. Are you guys planning on getting involved in any different business lines, or what's going to be your sole focus going forward?
So my Ether wallet is completely focused on Ethereum. We will add new features as they come. Like we supported staking functionality to our users. And then now when they can withdraw their funds, we'll add that feature as well. And then my Ether wallet is completely Ethereum based. And then at the same time, we also have multiple other products based on Ethereum, like ETHVM, which is our blockchain explorer, Mutopia, which is our like Ethereum educational platform. And then Mi Wallet, which is our mobile application. So we have a whole ecosystem around Ethereum to improve Ethereum and then bring a great user experience to every single user in Ethereum space. Basically, like what we want to accomplish is if you want to do something on Ethereum, you should be able to do it with one of our products. And that's where we want to be. And that's where we're trying to be and mm-hmm. our main goal. And then at the same time, we are like, okay, we don't have to limit to Ethereum. We can bring the exact same kind of user experience to other blockchains and then have just like one wallet to access every single blockchain. So they don't have to worry about, oh, memorizing like 6-10 different mnemonics or like 10 different keys or downloading 10 different extensions, things like that. So just like one extension to support basically all Web3.
One ring to rule them all.
Lord of the Rings, yes. But yeah, so that's where that's, I feel like that's going to be a necessity in the future. Like people, because there's no reason. Yeah, no reason for you to be just, you know, stuck with one chain. And because eventually there will be a chain that offers completely different feature set. And then you're like, okay, I want to use it. And it might not, that feature set might not be in Ethereum's roadmap, right? So it's like, okay, I have to use that blockchain in order to achieve that. And then eventually, maybe in like 10 years or so, we will be able to make it all seamless. And one single dApp will be able to interact with 10 different blockchains and then make users achieve what they want to do. Yeah. But in order to have that feature, we have to start today.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of like, you know, people having, you know, exchange accounts, and they always say not your keys, not your coins, but a lot of the exchanges, I mean, they're pretty buttoned up now at this point. Some of the reputable ones, obviously there's a lot of exchanges that have, you know, been hacked in the past, but kind of what's your stance on all this? Are you a hardliner? Like never have any money on the exchanges?
I mean, to be completely honest, I do have money on exchange. The founder of my wallet, I do have money on exchange. And we also, like, the company itself use a pretty well-known exchange in US to do, you know, we have to do our payroll.
Right.
So we have to do that. We have to exchange ETH or like all the funds or tokens that we get paid in to convert to USD so we can do the payroll. Yeah, we will definitely forever will need exchanges. But like where I draw the hard line is we can totally fine to use exchanges to do convert to fiat or get into crypto. But if there's a safer solution, which means non-custodial wallets to keep your crypto, there's no reason for you to, for long term, there's no reason for you to leave it on an exchange, right? It's not necessarily because the exchanges can get hacked, but when the funds are in the exchange, they can do other things with the funds, right? Like they can borrow, lend against. We saw like the Celsius just filing bankruptcy because they were using users' funds to do other things, just like banks, right? This is what banks do.
Yeah, what do they call it? Rehypothecation.
I will never be able to pronounce that word. But yeah.
Taking customer deposits and loaning it out to someone else.
So, and every single point introduce a new, like a point of failure. And then like your funds might be lost, not necessarily because of a hack, but something that the banks or like the exchange would do to increase their profit. And if you're a trader, like, and if you're like trader on centralized exchanges, then by all means, you have to have funds in the exchange in order to facilitate that. But if you're a trader on like just DEXs, then you don't have to have it in centralized exchanges. So it depends on the use case. But I draw my line where if you don't need like hot funds, like a hot wallet where you like constantly trade or do something, if you're saving something for long term, put it in a non-custodial wallet. Even if you're like a DEX trader, you don't have to have it in the exchange and then move just the funds that you need to trade to a non-custodial wallet. You can always just
use MetaMask with a hardware wallet.
Yeah, exactly. And move it to a hardware wallet also. So, or you can use Encrypt with a hardware wallet.
There we go.
So there are definitely...
How do we download Encrypt? What's the
Encrypt.com. URL? It's Encrypt.com.
ENKRYPT. Okay, perfect.
Encrypt. So it's Encrypt with a K.com. Yeah. In the future we'll be adding more blockchains. So basically one key you can use on every single blockchain.
Love it. Let me switch gears. I've got a higher level question for you. Zooming out outside of crypto wallets, outside of keys, let's talk about running a business. You've run a business through several bull markets and bear markets. We're kind of you know, some would say we're in a pretty strong bear market. Some say we're on the precipice of an even stronger bear market. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to ask you necessarily your opinion on where you think the market's going to go or anything like that. But how to just as a CEO, how as a business owner, do you manage the volatility of running a business and in the crypto market?
Yeah, there's definitely ups and downs. And then there are definitely calls that we have to make. We are like, oh, do we have enough funds to survive? At least in the beginning, right? We were like, okay, the time that ETH, when ETH went to like $80 or so, I think 3-4 years ago,
yeah,
which is crazy, right? It was $80, like I think crazy. 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago. That was pretty tough for us. I'm not going to lie. Like when ETH hits that kind of level, it's not easy because like the whole business is based on Ethereum mm-hmm. and Ethereum based tokens. And then there's this trend when like the market goes down, all like crypto goes down as well. So it was definitely tough. And then we learned our lesson. The main lesson is everyone thinks they're a good trader when the market is going up. So everyone's like, oh, I made so much money. I'm the best trader. Like put all your money on this crypto or this coin, this. If you're running a business, it's not easy to just like follow a trend. What we do, we whenever the market is high, or at least when we think, okay, it's high enough, we convert some of our volatile assets to like ETH and all these other crypto to stable coins. And we keep it separate. So which also means, okay, that's the downside of if the market keeps going up, then we won't make any profit on that because now our assets are stable, but it helps us cover it during a bear market.
Yeah. You basically take profits for a rainy day and yeah. you cover your runway, 5 months, 9 months out or whatever your runway in order to operate the business, you make exactly. sure that's covered when the market's good.
Exactly.
And I think so many people get caught up in like, oh, well, it's going up. It's going to yeah. keep going up. And then they never take profits. And this is a lesson that everybody learns is like, you got to take profits along the way at some point.
Yeah.
And since you're actually earning, you know, you guys earn income in Ethereum and in these tokens and stuff. Yeah. So you guys would be remiss to not at least, you know, book some of those gains.
Yeah. Everyone has to, it's so easy to like have this mindset of, oh, I'm a really good trader. Again, like when the market is going up and everyone thinks, and then I'm pretty sure you had your friends, like you have friends who are like, oh, like I made this much. Like I definitely got calls when the market was up, like when ETH was like 4K, and I was like, I made this much money last month, like trading. And then they don't even talk anymore. Like we are still in touch, but they don't talk about crypto anymore, which also right. means they lost all of it.
Lost.
Yeah. So unfortunately, like you have to lose that mindset. Cause if you keep having that mindset, then you are going to lose everything. So you have yeah. to take profit. And yes, like having a 12-month runaway, like in stable assets is really good way of looking at the future, or like making sure your company runs well for the next yeah. 12 months or so. And there were definitely struggles
during bear markets. Do you notice if you travel around to different dev cons and conferences, do you see kind of a different level of interaction, maybe a different level of enthusiasm or seriousness about the market during these sorts of periods relative to like bull market conferences?
I definitely do. Bull market conferences, it's everyone's just hyped. You know, they're like, it's all fake, but I can't say it's all fake because there are some good projects in the middle, but like you see ton of like hyped up projects, mm-hmm. ton of them. And then, and being in the space for like enough time, I can easily spot them, right? They're like, oh, we do this, or like come up with some like monkey looking NFT thing. And it's like, but what's the difference between you and the most popular one? Right. So, like, why are you doing this? But like, it's because like, someone made money and or like some investor put money while the market is high, and then they all have just money to spend, and they all just like create something, some derivative
kind of project, exactly, you know? Something not original. I've noticed that too, you know, I remember, you know, going to conferences and stuff, Ethereum San Francisco, you back in like 2018, and like some of these really key, cool conferences, kind of in the bear market of 2018.
Yeah.
And a lot of like Maker, for instance, the shirt I'm wearing, I mean, they were there. Seller Network was there. A couple of these guys like who were just like, hey, like we're just kind of starting and talking and, you know, then they go launch and you see they become these $1 billion companies. But in the bull market, you go and you see, you know, hundreds of these companies, and then 2 years later, none of them are there.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Cause like whenever I go to a conference, I always tell my team, well, like 90% of these companies will not be here for the next conference.
Yeah.
So true. Which is, yeah. And
totally
and,
true.
And it's, I don't know whether I think it's a way of filtering out bad people, right? Eventually we'll see the good projects surviving and then all the bad projects just dying off.
The cycle of life.
Yeah, exactly. And during bear markets, I definitely see people who either survive through like the previous years or people who, you know, somehow saved enough to sponsor for these conferences or get a booth, or even like people who are just getting into this space, they don't have a booth. I feel like those are the people like I really do like to talk to, because they have genuine ideas, genuine like goals to achieve, not just after money, you know. Yeah. And it's like, it's a different group of people that you can talk to. You can just sit down, have a good conversation.
If you were to shout out one other company that was in the space that you've kind of seen since the early days and has, you know, kind of come up with you, if you will, and really made an impact. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious of what are some companies that are out there that you think are kind of legit?
I have to say definitely Maker for DAI. And then the next company is the ENS. I'm a huge fan of ENS. It's because I know they released a token recently, but before that, it's just, you know, just like few people, just maybe like 4 to 5 people, including Nick Johnson, who just like put so much effort into making it a reality, and like wrote all the smart contracts, went through audits, didn't have a single, I don't think they were funded by anyone, unless like Ethereum, probably Ethereum Foundation funded them, and which is, you know, such a great team and such a great group of people. And I'm still in touch with them as well. And even like, even after the token launch, they're still developing, they're still adding new features, and it's a necessary feature to have in any blockchain, because no one's going to remember address, right? So you should be able to put a name to the address, so it's easy to remember. And which is, yeah, such a great project.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really excited about them. And you're right. They just launched a token, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago, if that. And like, they've been building for so long. And
so long,
you see, you see the reverse happen so much is, you know, there's these projects, they launch a token and then they say, okay, well, you know, we're in the process of building. And it's kind of this, you know, wonky little application you could hardly get transactions processed on. And so, yeah, they're a great example of somebody who did it the right way. In fact, I'd love to bring them on the podcast if you want to introduce. I mean,
yeah, it would be I'll fantastic. Check with Nick Johnson. Yeah, for sure.
That'll be cool. And maybe we'll get the crypto 101 .eth or something like that. But man, Casala, this has been amazing having you on the show. There's so many different areas that we could go with this, but we're running out of time. I just kind of got one last question for you, one that we ask everyone who comes on the show. And I'm going to say, except Vitalik Buterin, since you're so plugged in with the Ethereum ecosystem, maybe there's another knight in shining armor in that ecosystem. But out of everybody you kind of interacted with, who really impresses you? Who's somebody who's challenged you to think differently about Ethereum, or you know, made you have like a 0 to 1 moment?
I want to say I actually have multiple people.
Yeah, go for it.
Peter Szilagyi, who codes the Get, he's a code dev at Ethereum Foundation, who's behind, if you're using Get, probably 90% of the time everyone uses Get Ethereum client. you're basically using like code that he wrote at some point. I don't know whether he's super involved in actual coding now, but he's still like a senior level developer. And another person would be Nick Johnson, like I mentioned, for ENS. He helped me multiple times in multiple occasions, like sometimes about smart contracts, sometimes about like how Ethereum is functioning, things like that. And I also want to give a shout out to, I do not remember all the names. There are 8 people who mainly worked on Ethereum Merge. So shout out to all the devs who worked on the merge and made sure it's like went super smooth. So unfortunately I don't remember all the names,
but hey, I mean that's they really as you say, you know, they bared the cross for all of us over these years. Hey man, it was great. They did a great job, and Casal, it was wonderful getting to reconnect with you here on the podcast. And we'll talk with you again soon. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Bryce. Have a good one.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.